Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akio, and if you're interested in working from anywhere, company culture, and how to build trust, this episode is for you. Joining me today, I have two guests, Marlene Koppert, Head of People Experience over at Tinka, and Sebastian Becker, CTO over at Tinka as well. They are both on this work from anywhere journey, and they're here to share what they've learned. I'll put all their socials in the description below. Check them out, and with that being said, enjoy the episode. You called me and you were in the mountains somewhere in the mist, and no one has ever done that. I was like, you're on vacation, maybe. I didn't expect you to answer.
Yeah, I'm always, part of me is always on. And I was with the kids and they were walking on this bridge that I thought, oh, it's scary. And I thought, you're calling? This is a good break as well.
They were next to you also.
Yeah, they ran over the bridge. It was over a ravine. So I was really happy to say, sorry, I'm busy. So it's saved by you on that part.
That's really funny.
But I'm not always on, but a lot of times I'm still on thinking about stuff, doing stuff as well. It's not that I say to the kids, hey, don't bother. But if the moment is there, I'll pick it up and I'll fix it.
Yeah. So everyone also brings, like, you bring your laptop and like work phone and stuff like that.
But it's also right, like we discussed, right? You have several types of people. Some people really like to separate work from life, personal life, because work is part of your life. That's my view. So I don't feel like my work is intruding my holiday. Mm. So I don't feel that someone is expecting me to open up my laptop. I just, you know, I like to do some things while on a holiday.
Exactly. And you can still wind down, even though that part of you is sometimes still thinking about work?
Yeah, because especially when you have time to wind down, right? That's when you start thinking about things where you might not have the time to think about when you're busy working.
Mm. Do you have an example of that? Like, was there in this vacation period something where you were like, oh, when I come back, I'm going to pick this up?
Well, what I'm usually doing in my summer break is think about, so most people think the year runs from January to December, right? Mm-hmm. But my year usually starts after my summer break.
Okay.
So then I'm thinking, okay, what's up for the coming quarter? What's up for the coming year? How do I organize that? What should I tell my team about it? How, those are the things that are then on my mind.
I love that. I've never thought of it because in my head, it runs through Jan through December, sometimes Feb, because that's when I get my raise, my pay raise. But taking the time when you're away, whether that's summer or some people go away in winter, and reflecting and taking that as kind of a fresh start, I like that perspective a lot.
Yeah. It works for me, right? So it might not work for everyone, but for me it works.
Yeah, you get that. So everyone's like refreshed and recharged batteries and stuff.
Yeah, it's like a school. We both worked in a school. There you have it, right? You do your year, and then over the summer you think, hey, what am I going to do different? What's going to change?
Yeah.
That really helps.
Yeah, and summer, I mean, school times also have like a longer vacation.
Yeah.
Like a 6-week, I mean, elementary school, uni was different, was sometimes 8 weeks, and then you're just out of it, and you're reorganizing and making sure you're ready for the next year.
Yeah, and if you look at it, educators, they wind down, right? So the last 2 weeks is really reflecting on the year. Mm. And then you ramp up for the next year. You start thinking about what you're going to lecture that year and how it's going to work. So there's also sort of easing into the holiday and then easing out of it as well. Yeah. I think I do that as well.
Cool. Can you elaborate on what you do or what you did kind of working with schools and educating in that way?
Yeah, I was as a director of 7 schools, and it was vocational education.
Yeah.
So, and it was really about helping the curriculum and also connecting to the work field. Mm-hmm. And it was in the hotel industry, so totally different from here. But it helped me to see craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. So I did hotel management school as well, but this was on the restaurant level. And there you see how people really want to go where they want to go, and also how the industry takes these people along, how they make sure that they stay and they want to stay. And especially in the restaurant industry, it's hard, right? You train someone and they can work anywhere because of the skill set. So that was interesting for me.
Yeah.
And sometimes in tech, we tend to forget, right? We want the super seniors and we want them to hit the ground running. And in the restaurant industry, it's like, okay, if you're skilled and if you want to, you can learn and you can get to the complex part, like a Michelin star restaurant where it's really complex. So it's interesting to follow.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do you think in the tech world, it's the same, that where you have the skills, you can go into an organization and hit the ground running, the people that are really good? Or is there some additional stuff that's involved as well?
I think it's additional. And if you look at a formal restaurant, it's easier because everyone will follow the French setup, right? With the chef, the cuisine, and everything there. So it's easy to know your slot in an organization. Whereas I think that if you're a senior developer, it means something else in a different organization than the other one.
Yeah.
So there's a difference, I think. And it's harder to slot in. It might be an idea to think about it in that way.
I think it also has to do with how you organize, right? Because I've been working in a restaurant business where we work with non-professionals. And then we just made sure that we were organized in a way that a non-professional could work in that system.
Yeah.
So,
true.
You could also think about how to make a setup where you would start with non-professionals, so non-developers, and how you could train them on the job.
Yeah.
But then it's necessary that they have the skill set, which is, I think, about curiosity, a learning mindset, things like that, to really make that work.
Have you tried a program like that or something similar? Because we tried it at Xebia, actually. I was one of the people that pitched for it, where we have a bar that is quite high because it is a consultancy company. We expect a certain level of expertise. But I joined actually, and I only had 1 year of work experience when it came to software development. So I was always kind of an edge case. Kind of, they took a flyer on me, basically. And the funny thing is, after I got hired, I could see through their internal recruitment system what was said about my application and who was pro and who was against. And that was really fun reading back to it. But now that I've been here for 3 or 4 years, especially, I mean, back years when I pitched this, I wanted to pay it forward also for people that have a great mindset, have that curiosity and drive that you're looking for, are really a sponge and are looking for knowledge. Because I feel like, I mean, we advocate for knowledge sharing, so it should be something that we do anyways. And I feel like people that come in with a fresh perspective also add to a team.
Yep.
So then we developed kind of this program where people would join that have less work experience than what we usually look for. We train them for a month when it comes to ways of working, processes, some technical skills as well. And then we make sure they land in a team within a consultancy assignment. It's also aligned with the client. They have a different hourly rate. Everything should be fine. And that's a program we started off with the beginning of this year. We hired 2 people as kind of a proof of concept to see how it would land. And it was a lot of fun doing it, actually. I talked to people and they were like, okay, now that we've been doing this for a bit, it's been now 8 months, actually, how's it gone? And there were some challenges and some interesting tidbits along the way. I really liked the first month of training. I'm a horrible planner and I had to plan the whole thing. So also some things fell through the cracks where there was like, okay, we expected this person to show up. They're actually at home. They can't be there. Oh, this other person also is knowledgeable about this thing. They can give the training. So stuff like that we also did on the fly. And the people landed the assignments and they're right now really happy with the decision they made to join this company because they're learning a lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your question, we haven't tried it. So we take juniors from school and we train them and we try to get them to commit code as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really taken what you say, right? Amazon does the same, right? If you don't have education, you can still grow into that part.
Yeah.
We haven't done that yet, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm
curious. Will you expand that from 2 to 20?
We'll try, because also right now, with regards to the economy, we've had challenges finding the right assignment for the people mm-hmm. that we hired back then. So with that in mind, we still want to make our sales pipeline a bit more robust before we try this again. But everyone I talk to is really enthusiastic. They even want to be involved so they can share what they learned for the new round, let's say, and expand it. So I'm hoping yes, but our sales needs to be a bit more robust so we can land an assignment easier for them, for the new people that would land.
Yeah, I'm going back to the schools. If you go back to the schools and discuss it with them, that will make the break from school to work also much easier. So it's interesting.
We're trying to get to that, like from the educational journey, we pick them up.
Yeah.
That's not where we're at right now. We went through, okay, this is our bar and we're going to go a little bit below that. So we do have bad people that have work experience, but not the work experience that we require. So we can help them with that 1 month of training in bridging the gap.
Yeah.
But I definitely, also because I like working with people that are kind of a blank canvas in that way, I definitely want to go from that educational route and then they join our organization to learn and grow from. I think that's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And it will also help change the industry, right? Because mm-hmm. it's still, you have to have this this type of background or this type of experience, or they're interlinked.
Yeah.
And changing that is also core, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to how you hire and what you're doing at Tinka, you mentioned actually, Marlene, in our intro call that you've hired someone even from Kenya. And the thought that popped in my mind back then, I was like, if you're hiring globally in that way, in a fully remote way of working, how do you make sure that the culture and the people still work together effectively as you want them to?
Yeah, well, as we discussed, right, it's not like we started this work from anywhere strategy yeah. just because we thought that was a fun thing to do, right? That was a strategic choice, knowing that we would need some specific talent that we probably could not find in Zwolle, the Netherlands, or maybe even Europe, right?
Yeah.
So that's when we started thinking how to solve that problem. And because of COVID and where everyone saw that working from home wasn't that scary as some people thought it would be, that's how we came up with that strategic decision to just have this work from anywhere. Well, policy, it's guidelines,
yeah.
our strategy.
It's a way of working.
A way of working.
Yeah.
So that's how it started. And you don't start with hiring someone in Kenya.
No.
Right? So we started with Portugal, Germany, countries like that. And what I see in Tinka is, because everyone is working from anywhere, you don't have this distinguish between, okay, so you have 50 people in an office and you have 10 people working from anywhere. That
yeah.
doesn't work. That doesn't feel like one team.
Mm.
But if everyone is working from anywhere, then everyone is the same.
Yeah.
So most meetings are remote. So it's not like you're meeting with 10 people who are physically in a room and you're the only one trying to participate in a meeting online. So that helps. And what we also do is organize events where teams or even the entire company gets together.
Mm.
And there we put emphasis on social cohesion. So we don't ask people to come to the Netherlands for, as we say, Tinkapendence Day, which is our annual Tinka party, to just sit them down and bore them with 800 slides about Tinka.
Information. Yeah.
No, we invite them to come over and just spend a nice day with colleagues.
Love that.
And, well, I have seen that people respond quite positively to that.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly planning to keep that. And of course, right, as you said, how do you make sure that you have a culture?
Mm.
But I think that's always an interesting conversation, right? And the first question that then immediately pops up with me is, yeah, but what is it, culture, right? Because sometimes I get the feeling like people discuss this as this, okay, this is the culture, almost as you could put it in a box or so, right?
Yeah.
Where I think it's culture is mainly about behavior.
Mm.
So culture is how you do things in your company. And I think you can align that also when you're working from anywhere.
Yeah.
And of course, you don't have the water cooler conversations, right? Because there is no water cooler. So you have to be intentional and think about what can you organize to make that happen. If you ask me, that is sometimes as simple as, oh, let's see, I have 10 minutes in my calendar. Let's call someone.
Hmm.
How are you doing?
Yeah, as simple as that.
It's as simple as that. And you see people who quite naturally pick that up. And you see people who would then say, yeah, HR should organize something for me. And it's and it's like, okay. That's interesting, right?
Yeah, that's a different mindset, I guess.
But that's a different mindset. And
yeah.
And again, there's no wrong or right. So you need to, that's also about different people looking at things differently, and how do you cater for all sorts of personality types?
Yeah, that's where I thought the challenge was going to be, right? Because even though you start small, you start with a specific culture, right? The way you do things around here,
yeah,
basically. And then you went to Portugal and Germany, which are still kind of adjacent, some a bit further than others. But then they come in and they can see the existing work culture, but they bring in their previous work experience, how they've done it previously, their previous cultures as well. Do you feel like your culture is then still ever evolving when new people come in?
I think in every company, culture is an ever evolving thing.
Mm.
So yes, I think it's ever evolving. And it's also, I look at culture, okay, what is the strategy for the company? What is the plan?
Yeah.
And what is the company's current state of mind?
Okay.
That's culture, right? And is there a match or isn't there a match?
Yeah.
So for example, when we carved out Tinka, we knew we had to make the step to really become this innovative, learning organization, sometimes willing to take calculated risks. And that was a different form of behavior than how the company previously operated.
Yeah.
So then you know you have to have a culture change, right? But if as soon as you say it's culture change, everyone goes like, oh, that's, I don't know.
Yeah, where are we going?
You know, because with change, right, it's like everyone says, yeah, it needs to change. And then, but that also means that you have to change. Now I don't have to change. The other people have to change, right? Yeah. So I think we took quite a low profile approach there.
Okay.
And as I said, right, culture is behavior in your organization. So if you need to change something there, then what you're actually talking about is change of behavior.
Yeah.
And how do you do that? Well, you can read 1,000 books about it, but what always helps me is quite a simple structure for it, which is you need to prioritize the behavior you need.
Mm.
You then habitualize people with that behavior. And then you put the systems in place, or you check whether all your systems are aligned with the behavior you want to see in your company.
Exactly.
And that to me makes it quite simple and quite tangible. And then the next question is, how do you prioritize behavior? Well, what we did is we said, okay, most companies have values. And then we said, yeah, we probably should also have values, but what is it with values, right? Because you typically write them on a poster, stick them on a wall somewhere, and then HR tells you that this is how you need.
In the intro, this is the onboarding, this is the values.
So here's the handbook, do this, you'll be fine. And we said, okay, let's not talk about values, let's talk about virtues. Because and that seems like a small difference, but virtues is more, it has more of the behavioral side of things in it already, how you describe a value. And then it's like, okay, who tells the people that these are our virtues? Is that HR? No. Is that just the management team or the CEO? No, because, you know, if it's our company, then it's all of us.
It should be everyone.
And then, of course, as HR, you can make sure that this project or that this subject gets the right attention in the company. So that's the role I took.
Yeah.
I organized workshops where everyone that worked for the company would go through the workshop, and it's not like I was telling people, okay, this is the virtue, this is what it means.
Yeah.
We just had open conversations with people. Okay, if this is the virtue, what does that mean to you personally? How do you feel about it?
Yeah.
How do you recognize this in your day-to-day work? Or maybe you don't recognize it at all. So then we're not doing what we're telling that we're doing. So how do you think we can solve that? Where do you start?
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed doing those workshops.
I can imagine.
It was super cool. And what we also did, we did not only people that were on our own payroll participated, but also the people we worked with, right? So independent contractors who would work with Tinka for a bit longer, they also participated to really get this 360 view on, okay, if you say this, but I see that, then there's probably something.
There's something missing.
Yeah. There's something missing. But also really good to hear, right? And it's also something that made people feel proud, right? Because you're also discussing what is already going really well.
Yeah. Exactly. I feel like having those discussions and having them open as you laid it out, there's no right or wrong answers, an opinion and it's a perception on things that have happened or things that are happening kind of in your inner circle. And at the end, you can decide if you accept that or not, what you think of that or not. But the perceptions are the perceptions, right? They have happened. You just lay them out and you discuss if this is kind of the way that you want to work together. Yeah. If not, you make a change. And if this is how you want to work together, then you're aligned. You kind of have this shared mindset of the virtues that you laid out.
And there was another interesting thing that you did. You mixed a lot of different departments. So it was all in context. So you had the people from development talking to the people in the call center.
Yeah.
And they have different contexts. So they have customers that talk directly to them, and the developers are thinking about how do we build better systems. So it was also really about sharing that context to one company. That was also interesting to hear and to see.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you're then there from the software development side. And I'm assuming you want to understand all the domains that are adjacent to that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And and maybe even further than that, right? If you talk to finance, normally if you're a developer or if you're in development, you don't go there. But really hearing how they view the company and what their concerns are is even more interesting than talking to the direct users of your systems.
Yeah. So, exactly. And does everyone from the team or a few people of the team, do they share those kind of interests and areas of interest? Because me, from a software engineering perspective, I love knowing about the business, but that's, I think, because of the person who I am. I am innately curious. And when we're building something for a customer, I also want to understand where they come from. Yeah. And I would love if that's carried on through the team as well, but I'm not sure how that is.
Yeah, it's a personal mindset, right?
Yeah.
So some people say, well, I want to know, I want to see what's happening, I want to understand. Others are less so and say, well, tell me what to do. But in the end, how we hire is that curiosity is always there in a certain level.
Exactly. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be hard. If you're not curious, it's hard to connect to a remote company as well, I think.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. How have the challenges been in working remotely, kind of within the tech side of things? Have you seen challenges when bringing together those people that are living in different areas, or is it still doable in that way?
I think it's still doable. It's also due to the size that we have. So there you can make a direct connection with almost anyone in the company, right?
Yeah.
It's small enough that it's still manageable in that size. I think that helps. I think it also helps that most of the developers, if you look at the community, it started with development. Now it's also going to the call center and on other places as well. But for most of the developers already were used to some sense of remote or not everyone in the same room.
Yeah.
So that made it easier for us. So I don't think that there were big problems. What you saw happening is you had to really actively get them out. Like Marnane said, you have to get those 10 minutes in and think about, okay, I have to talk to the juniors and not the seniors.
Yeah.
But it went fluid gradually, I think. COVID helped there because then it was what it was.
Kind of forced,
Yeah. And now I don't see anything that I say, oh, it's a problem, we have to go back or we have to manage it in some way.
Is it because everyone has kind of built these relationships, you think? Or do people already speak the same language because of the technical domain? Why do you think it is as smooth as it is?
It's a combination. And I'm looking at Marlene, I'm looking at you as well. I think that what we saw is we had a sort of lighthouse. We had a head of data science and data engineering. He was living in Stockholm and he really made it his key point. And we learned a lot from him because he showed the way, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do this deliberately.
Yeah.
And that helped us see and also make the shift in, okay, it's something else than just not being in the same office. We have to do this in a different way, I think.
Yeah. And that is interacting together? Is that what he's talking about?
Yeah, it's everything. So it's the rituals, so the interaction, the social talks, the knowledge sharing, everything that you do. Like you have at Xebia, the XKE, the knowledge exchange. How do you do that remotely?
Yeah.
How do you as a team bond remotely? And also how do you deal with setbacks remotely, right? If something goes wrong or an error is made, how do you get together and learn from it and also share what happened, right?
Yeah.
If you make a mistake, and normally in the office, someone will pat you in the back, hey, it doesn't matter. But how do you do that if you can't talk to them in the water cooler? I think that helped us because he showed us, okay, you can do this remotely. if you make that deliberate choice, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mané, you wanted to chime in, I saw?
Yeah, I think it. So I think that's part of it, right? How do you organize and be intentional about things, put it on the agenda?
Yeah.
When I started with Tinka, Tinka didn't have an HR department. And I'm saying HR department constantly, but our department's actual name is People Experience. Because we think about employees as people, not as resources.
That's good.
But that aside. So then I started and onboarded my team. And that's where I was thinking, okay, this might be complex, right?
Yeah.
Because the entire team is new in the company. The people department should, you know, be aligned with what is happening in the company as a whole. And also for me, how do I make sure that my new team feels at home in this organization where I don't see them?
Yeah.
So how did we do that? We just had conversations about it, right? So when starting with Tinka, they knew where they were stepping into. So if they were like people who would like to be in an office for 5 days, they probably would have not joined Tinka.
Yeah.
So I think that is step one.
Yeah, the expectations.
That's expectation management. And it's also, I think, one of the upsides of being able to start an entire new team, right?
Yeah, clean slate.
Clean slate. And, you know, if you have a team where you have three people that like to be in an office the entire week, that's a different problem you have at hand. I didn't have that problem. But what my team did, which was, I think, really smart and really cool thing, so they just started working while having a Slack call open for maybe 70% of the day. So they would just, you know, be working each in their own home, but having this constant open line, at least with each other. And I really said to them, listen, I get it. It's hard, right? It's a new company. It's, they were junior when they started working in my team. So I said, listen, if there's something or a worry or you're stuck, just call me. Mm. And if you cannot reach me, just text me or Slack me or whatever. I will always prioritize you over anything else I'm working on at that moment. And I think that's just how we started it. And,
I want to zoom in on that because we also tried that, the whole open communication channel.
Yeah.
People were saying when COVID happened, like I'm in my apartment, I'm really alone. I miss the office chatter and stuff like that. And then we opened up the call and in some instances it worked. And in some instances where I, for example, would say to someone, you can always call me, I'll prioritize it, stuff like that. It would not always work. I feel like there's a certain skill and probably how you came across to those people, the trust that you build with them, allowed them to step to you or to any other colleague to ask those questions because it requires a safe space. How did you kind of engage that and create that within the new team as well?
I think that's part of, right? If you really openly discuss, listen, it's not like a million companies before have done this for 50 years, right?
Yeah.
And it's also, think about it, right? When I started working for Tinka as a head of people in a work from anywhere environment, most HR people would look at me, that doesn't work.
No.
How do you connect with people?
How do you
don't
do that?
See the people, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is part of it, right? Having that conversation and also being really honest about it. No, it is not 100% ideal, right? There are certain aspects of it that aren't that ideal and that will never be ideal.
Yeah.
On the other side, working in a open office space is not ideal either.
No.
So then it's all about, okay, if this is the situation, this is the setup we deliberately chose, it's a strategic decision we took, how do we make it work and how do we make it work for everyone?
Yeah.
And it's also learning by doing it. And as long as you see the fun and the beauty of that learning curve, I think there's no, again, there's no right or wrong. It's just, okay, this works for us, doesn't work for anyone. So the team you mentioned, right? They are also doing things that don't work for my team. Mm. On the other hand, there are things that I do with my team that won't work in that team.
Yeah.
So it's also taking the space to really, again, almost personalize the experience.
Yeah, it's interesting that you lay that out because the you want your virtues to kind of be upheld through the teams, right?
Yeah.
But the way of working within the team, as you lay it out, is apparently flexible. It's more so tailored towards how do these people want to work together and really form a team, right? Because
yep.
you don't start off as a team. You're a bunch of people together. And then you learn how to be a team by probably trying things out. Does an open communication channel yep. work for us? Or do we do something else? Do we call up someone when someone needs someone or something else in that way? Still, I feel like at the fundamental level, it might have to do with the virtues and how you get people to jump aboard on the first place. But there needs to be kind of this trust level, this safe space for people to do that, to be themselves, even though they are remote, with people they have probably never seen in person or not yet, and still be comfortable with that.
Yeah. And what that, for us in tech, what helped was if you have a big incident and you do in Slack the huddle, you set open the channel and everyone joins and can join from the company.
Yeah.
That also created something because then you're all there. Mm. And what we try to do then is also make jokes, do something on the side, right? You're not always working. You're waiting for something to happen or someone to come back.
Yeah.
And what we also saw is there was a lot of stress. There was a lot happening. People were relying on the systems. They were also in that call. And we just had a chit chat as well, right? Someone said, I'm going to call the vendor. I'm going to call this. I think that helped us in the early COVID months as well. And we keep that up. So if there's an incident, anyone from the company can join. And if you're a new joiner, and I'll say, hey, join those channels and listen up, because then you hear how people work together.
Yeah.
Might be that you're right. You triggered me something on trust. And then I thought, well, there we try to build the trust. Everyone does the best that they can.
Yeah.
There's no wrong thing there. And it's all about keeping the pressure down so you can keep on thinking. Might be that there's something there that helped us. I don't know.
And also with trust, right? Wherever people work, mistakes happen.
Yeah.
I make mistakes, you make mistakes, everyone makes them. And I think if you look at trust, it's mainly how you respond or react to something that went wrong, which then is the proof of the pudding for people. Okay, is it trustworthy here? Or do they just say it's all right to make mistakes?
I like that a lot. It probably wasn't a conscious choice to open up the channel and make everyone or try and make everyone comfortable. It's just what happened because of the people, because of the openness and probably the transparency in the culture.
And there's also this paradox of trust or paradox of safety, right? Mm. To find out that it actually is safe or that you can actually trust someone, you first have to make the first step, which is where the paradox is, right?
Give it a try. Yeah.
So try and then find out what happens.
Yeah.
And then as leadership, really make sure that you don't make mistakes there, right? You can make a lot of mistakes, but as in a leadership position, you don't make the mistake there.
Yeah.
And it's hard, right? Because we're also people.
You also make mistakes also there.
Yeah, also there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's also right. For example, what I do if something goes wrong, right? I know the people on my team. They are they really want to do the right things, right? They really want to do the right things right. So whenever they make a mistake, I know that it's probably the biggest problem for themselves.
Yeah.
And then I just ring them. Hey, what's up? Well, nothing is up. I was just checking whether you weren't making yourself going crazy.
Exactly.
About something that went wrong earlier today. Because that shouldn't happen. I'm just calling you to say, stop it.
Yeah. In other environments, other people would say, you made that mistake, and they would kind of drill down on that. But because you know the type of people that are in your team, you didn't have to do that. You knew they were already aware of the mistake, and they were already making sure that wasn't going to happen again.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, okay, let's discuss that, right?
Yeah.
So this happened. Okay, not ideal. But the world is not ideal.
Exactly.
So, okay, this happened. How do we go about it next time? What can we put in place to prevent this from happening another time? And also making sure, right, it's not like I'm writing this down for your quarterly review to...
to confront you with. Yeah, I get that. When we're looking at kind of the foundation that we just laid out in being effective and still being remote, We talked about the virtues. We talked about kind of creating this safe space, allowing for mistakes to happen and building trust in that way. Is there any ingredient that's kind of missing that you would still want to add there?
I've something. I think that we have a clear purpose. So what we set out is we're going to make it better for our customers. We're going to be more responsible in how we do it as Tinka.
Yeah.
I think that also helped because people really wanted to connect. If you're remote, you want to connect to the goal more than if you're not remote. If you have the interviews as well, people are really looking, okay, what are you going to do? Why are you here?
Yeah.
I don't know if we chose them, but so many of the questions were, why do you do what you do?
Yeah.
And the people that asked those questions invariably were also the people who were really successful in getting with us because they were like, I'm not just going to work here because it's remote. I want to work here because we're going to do something.
Yeah. I think I need to understand.
Yeah, I want to understand. And I think that's also part of what's really important. And I think that's maybe also something that you put in every opening had those, this is why we're here.
Yeah.
And maybe we funneled or we filtered out these people that were looking for that, but that helped from the get-go.
Yeah. Was that always as crystal clear from the start? Or was it really when people were challenging and asking those questions that it was honed?
Yeah, I think the last part, right? Yeah, I think that you start doing something and then you see, hey, there's this side effect. That's what's happening. And then, of course, you zoom in and you think, okay, that's what we're going to do. But I see that works for us as well, I think.
I like that a lot. Also, the acknowledgement that you're not starting off perfect, right? Yes, you have a purpose, but it's still kind of malleable. And I feel like the more conversations you have, the more people that onboard you and that want to kind of go in the ship and sail with you, the sharper it gets, the more crystal clear it gets.
Yeah, it's like Marlene said on culture, right? Everyone brings something.
Yeah.
And it's a flywheel.
It's ever shifting.
Yeah.
I like that. In working together remotely and it being going the right way, let's say, have you also experienced something that didn't go as right that you've pivoted or still are working on when it comes to challenges there?
Well, I think if you look at work from anywhere, I think most people in a company have a really positive outlook on that, right? So we have this thing called office vibe where people can put in feedback. And if I look at what people are positive about, then work from anywhere is definitely part of it.
Yeah.
I think where we can always be better is in making sure that everyone is aligned with everything they need to know.
Mm.
On the other hand, I'm not sure if that would be different if we were in the office. So, but I think being remote
makes it a bit more of a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's it makes it a bit more of a challenge, or it makes it easier for people to say that something isn't communicated because you're this work from anywhere, right?
Okay.
So I think it's two sides of the coin.
Interesting.
Basically, and I think as a manager or as a leader in a company, I think for each and every team, that should be prioritized.
Mm.
Do my people know what they need to know?
Yeah.
Have I communicated everything they need to know at the earliest moment in an understandable way?
And does it land?
And does it land, right? So we have town halls. And what I do after each and every town hall is call my team and ask them, okay, what is your takeaway?
Okay.
So this part, to me, it was a lot of information. And so what's your takeaway? Did you really understand? What does that mean to you?
Yeah.
So that's a question I ask them to check. But I also think if you have a really large team, that's more difficult.
I can imagine. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be harder then. I like the kind of checking, because probably if it doesn't land, it's something for you to improve or whoever that gives that information to improve as well. And if it does land, then you know it was well done. It's land that everyone knows now. We kind of have the shared mindset of where we're going.
Or at least for my team.
Exactly. Yeah. You wanted to mention something as well?
Yeah, the town hall is one of the parts. So we have a centralized town hall, but for tech, we do that as well with the context and what's happening. I still find that the hardest part to organize. Okay. So one-on-one, it's easier, or one-on-two or three. Yeah. Then you can do it because then the conversation is still happening, even remote. But having a sort of screen and getting the interaction in, getting the feedback in, and not always having the sort of water cooler talk afterwards, that's the hardest part, I think. Those town halls, getting that in, getting the interaction and getting the feedback, I'm still struggling with it.
Why do you think that is? Is it because kind of the grandeur that a town hall brings? Because you said when an incident happens, for example, you do have those interactions that you're looking for.
Yeah, everyone steps in with a purpose at that moment, right? Something is broken, something is happening. And with a town hall, you set a time and a date, everyone shows up. And probably there was half of the time they're still with their minds on the problem that they're trying to solve or the next meeting that's coming up.
Yeah.
And then you get all these blank phases, right? You're talking. I find it hard. Maybe the difference is with what do they expect out of that meeting?
Mm.
But I don't know yet. I'm struggling with it because I got some memes of the Rove people in the same shirt or the Muppet Show. You have that background as well. We try not to make it too big, but it's hard to make it interactive and to really get 20 or 30 people to really be there and take it in,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I can imagine. Also with the organization that is growing, some stuff that is going to work well or some stuff that are already challenges are going to be more apparent or going to have to shift also with the growth of the company. Is that something you're consciously thinking about with the processes you have now versus kind of how the company is growing?
Yeah, if I look at it, what I see is you're always one or two steps behind, right? You see it when it happened and then you start thinking about it. So I'm now in the process. How do I fix it? And to be honest, I've thought about it a lot. We tried some stuff. We also tried the Gather Town where you can walk around and do stuff. I haven't found a solution for this one yet.
Yeah,
that's maybe the biggest setback. And then you go and do one-on-one or one with smaller groups, but that's also hard. You give a different message. You miss information. It's hard.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
What are your thoughts on kind of staying ahead with regards to processes when a company is still growing? Are you actively reflecting what you have now versus where the company's heading towards, or even with growth and just the amount of people?
I think if the answer to that question would be no, then we're definitely doing something wrong, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's not easy to solve this.
Yeah.
You know, what I see people do is as soon as someone misses some information or wants to share some information, then it's always, let's do that. That should be in the town hall. But listen, town halls aren't a cure for every disease in a company, right? It's not like there's this magical silver bullet. And I really strongly believe that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like a cascade, right? So town hall is more overall information for the entire company. And then for each and every team, if you ask me, should look into, how big is the team?
Hmm.
I have a small team, right? I can quite easily call people after the meeting and just make sure that I pinpoint the things that I think are especially important for the people team.
Yeah.
Your team is a lot bigger. So as you just said, right, that would not work for you. And then the question is, what can you organize to also make it work for your team?
Yeah.
And I think that is something that I discuss with most leaders in the company. And it's also not for every team the same solution.
I can imagine, just like the team processes within the team, how the communication structures are in place is also different.
And also I think, right, if you speak with people and something goes wrong, probably the first thing that is mentioned is communication. So something went wrong because of the communication that was missing or wasn't well or wasn't timely or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the case, but at not in 100% of the cases.
No.
So I think part of it is asking people questions. What do you mean? What information is missing?
Yeah.
And some people just want to know a bit more about the strategy, but other people just want to really need their manager to point out, okay, so this is what it means to you in your day-to-day job.
Yeah. This is the impact.
This is the impact. So then again, right, it is about interacting and asking questions and having an honest conversation about it.
Yeah, and also being flexible in that position to kind of tailor fit to whatever the people need, right? If people want to understand more so the strategy, then at that point in time, you have to lay that out. And if people want to know kind of the impact in their day-to-day, then at that moment, you have to explain that a bit more, communicate that more. I feel like it's really hard to be in a position like that and not be flexible. If you're like, this is my way or the highway, then it's not going to work, or you're only going to have the same people and people like you probably. Yeah.
And if you have that right, then diversity.
It's not going to work.
It's not going
to
happen.
No. You need to be flexible. That is like at the ground.
And I think that makes it more complicated for managers, right?
Yeah.
It's easier to lead a team where everyone is the same, where everyone has the same needs and wants and thinks in the same way.
Yeah.
But it's also not fun.
No, it's not fun. And also it has flaws, right? I think back because I used to say this in elementary school. I'd be like, oh, if there was a team of me's, we would have this done. And now I know I have so many flaws that I'm like, nah, this part would get done really well and this part would not get done at all. Yeah. So that's, I think it takes some realization, and probably you have to have been in that position. You have to have worked with people that are more diverse. Like the fondest memories of a team I had was when we had like 10 different nationalities, where I would sit at the lunch table, look around at my team. And this was also kind of a team within a bigger team, but sure, I would count the nationalities and we would have 10 different ones in a group of like 14, 15 people. I thought that was really cool because I was growing not just on a technical level, on a professional level, but on a personal level. I learned about their cultures. They made me excited to travel there. It was on a bigger level than just work. And I feel like where work and personal life kind of assimilate, especially because we can do that now with remote working, is where you're going to have the most joy, the most flexibility also as a person, and hopefully grow the most as well. Yeah. In kind of rounding off this topic of remote working and effective working, is there anything that is still missing that you still want to add on? Because otherwise I want to go into kind of my last thought, which is how you two got to work together as long as you have been. Is there anything that was still missing? Sorry.
No, I think we covered quite a lot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Cool. Then who can take a stab at how you two got to work together and still have been working together for so long? Who wants to kick that off? Normally I do this at the start, but I like to round off this time.
I think we met at Wecomp.
Okay.
Where you were our team manager and I was the HR business partner for the department. I had never worked in technology.
Okay. This was like a first time.
So I would join stand-ups where I could literally not understand any word that was said.
Did you know what a stand-up was?
Well, Sebastian taught me.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And then at night, because my husband also works in technology, I would ask him a bunch of questions, right? To not, you know, look stupid at work. But I think it only took me a few weeks to really like that technology environment and mainly the people working in it.
Yeah.
I think in a different life, I could work in technology, right? So, that really felt like I found my place.
Mm.
You were working as an IT manager and we were working together quite a lot because there was a transformation going on back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I liked in the conversation is talking about systems like we do on this table. What's happening here? Why is it happening? And what's the layer beneath it? And why are the actors acting the way that they do?
Mm.
That's something that that I like to see and to see how can I influence, how can I make it better. And that's also from the get-go. You were there, right? You didn't know what a stand-up was maybe, but you did know how a group works together. Mm. And you see that right away in a stand-up with a visualization of everything.
Yeah.
And in that part, you hit off right away. You said, I don't know what's happening here, but I see that this is happening. And that's how we took off right away. And from there, then you see a lot happening. You learn. You think, okay, let's do it differently. I think that we also in the transformation, we had a lot of ouch moments.
A lot. And we also had a lot of moments where we didn't agree.
Yep.
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 I think that's also healthy to not always agree, but to challenge each other in that way.
Yeah.
And that's also cool, right? And then way back in this conversation, you spoke about trust.
Yeah.
And I think that is what is most important, right? There have been times where we would disagree very, very firmly, but I would always trust that we would find a solution.
Yeah.
Somewhere, somehow. And that it wasn't personal.
Mm. Is that hard to not take it personal when it comes to, like, you have this common interest, right? The shared passion even sometimes. And when you disagree, you can take that objectively. Like, this is what we disagree on. And I feel like some people also take that personally. It's different for different cultures. Sometimes it's faster than others. But it is a challenge, I feel like. Have you experienced that as well?
Yeah, for me it is. Because I think that the way, if you try to change things, you take a lot of yourself into the job, right? Otherwise, if you're really detached and you're completely the objective observer, you can't change a system, right? You have to be in that system in order to change it. So from time to time, it's hard. That's also what you say to me. Then I'm like, oh, I want this fixed. And I have this drive to get it fixed. And you're like, chill. So that's maybe also the trust that you get the feedback. Mm. You know both, you're in it. You also want to change things and you have things that you hold dearly.
Yeah.
But if you have the trust that you can also have that meta discussion, that's important, yeah. I think.
I think you share a goal and you share how you would look at things from a moral side of things, maybe even.
Yeah.
And then life happens, right? Or work, in our case, work happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it is about the paradox of safety, paradox of trust. Okay, so we now had, I think the first time I said something that wasn't that nice. And then you looked at me, whoa. And I was like, yeah, it's not nice to hear, I get it. But it's not true.
Exactly.
So think I said about it for a reason. Right? And as I walked away, I was like, okay, now let's see.
Yeah. What happens?
Yeah, because I'm the kind of person, right? Most people would think I'm kind of direct, but I would, to give that direct feedback, wouldn't do that all the time. So okay. To do that, I think that for me was one of the, was a moment to check whether I think I can trust this guy. But,
okay.
You know, what happens if I, what happens if I tell him this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because if it breaks, then you know it's not the trust next time.
Yeah. So
I passed the test, I think. It wasn't easy, right? So you get something that goes to your core and you get feedback. You're like, first you're angry, right? If you get that feedback, what's she saying? Huh? And then you go back and you're like, yeah, she's got a point. And then you also think, why does it hit me so hard?
Why does
it
sting?
Yeah, why does it sting? And it's at your core. And then you think, okay, yeah, I have to think about this one.
Interesting.
So that's how we do it.
I can also think about 100 times where I would be, not panicked, right? But worried about something and then call you and then you would tell me something and then you would say, yeah, this doesn't help, right? No, not at the moment because I'm too emotional, but tomorrow this will help me. So thank you anyways, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. I mean, the hard part is, like, I'm a software engineer more so on a day-to-day, and I work in teams, and the teams are various sizes, right? I know people that I work with that are close to me that I have built up that relationship, that we have had those discussions, and we're still out of it together, probably, and we know each other more because of that. But as the team grows, and also with more people, having that kind of team quality that you would have with a one-on-one or one like in a group of three, it gets trickled down with more people. And I feel like that is kind of the challenge that we have with creating software, in that a team size matters a lot, but I don't know if it is known that it matters a lot. Sometimes I feel this kind of urge, if there's more people than the problem, the solving of the problem goes faster, or the solution is there faster. And I thoroughly disagree with that, because I'm in the team, basically. So to hear you say that you two work effectively because you've gone through a lot, you've been open and honest with each other a lot as well, I feel like that makes a lot of sense, because it is kind of that one-on-one dynamic. And then for me to have that with each individual of a team, let's say of seven people, that's just not going to happen. That's going to go years down the line before we have that with each individual. And probably that team is not going to be the same then as well.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Cool. I want to round it off here. I want to thank you both so much for coming on. How was this? Was this as nervous as you thought it was going to be, or did it... Was it
less nervous? More of a sort of normal conversation that we have about teams.
That's good.
And I like your question. So it was really cool.
Thanks. Thank you as well.
Yeah, same goes for me, right? I told you when we met last week, had the first conversation, I immediately liked the way you ask questions. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Cool. I'm going to round it off here then, everyone. I'm going to put Sebastian and Marlene's socials in the description below. Check them out. Let them know you came from our show. And with that being said, thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one.